My name is Father Bernard from St. Vincent of Lorenz Orthodox Church in Saskatoon, Canada. You spoke about having had sort of like crisis events with parishioners where, like this lady that you did not serve, the lady you served, and then your daughter to whom you did not serve. And I find myself with two of those. And maybe some reflection on how can you creatively deal with these situations so that they don't end up destroying us and so that they can hopefully be redeemable. In both of these cases, both of these people ended up not being in the church anymore, and I continue to live with that. And that's a huge sorrow. But how can I keep going? I mean, I can, but how can I continue in a very healthy way without allowing that to be something that is constantly sort of depressing what I do? Maybe you can just talk a little bit about that. I think we're supposed to be asking questions, are we not?
So the question is about reflecting on those moments that we're presented with and have to struggle through, live with, that maybe don't go the way that we hope or anticipate that they will, and how to continue living with that. What I hear in your asking the question is reflective as much of the inner self as it is the situations at hand. We, as caregivers, we're programmed to help. We're programmed to make things better as we're able to. And so those moments when things don't go that way, when they seem to go badly, we struggle with that. And we take a lot of that responsibility on ourselves, because we are those caring pastors. So I think the first thing I would say is that we have to be mindful of that in our own spiritual life. Process these moments with our own confessor. Hopefully we are carrying through with that. Because we can be our own worst enemies in that way, by carefully tallying those mistakes, see how they come forth when we have an opportunity to share with each other, the things that we struggle with in our heart. So we can be our own worst enemies in that respect. So lifting that up with our spiritual father, I think another very important part is we continue to pray for them. That was Bishop Michael's witness yesterday, that he has continued to pray for that woman even long after she has passed away. We pray that in God's own time, things will work out. I think if I were to dare to take a further step with that, represented some learning from clinical training that has been invaluable, even though not easy. And the way that goes is, in clinical training, you have a group of trainees who are interacting with each other. So they bring a ministry encounter, and they share it, and they get feedback on it. And then at other points of the group, for those who haven't taken CPE, there's an opportunity to interact directly with one another. So, you know, you're always the funny guy, or you make me angry in this way, and have direct interaction that's then reflected on. So inevitably, in that context, there are things that emerge that may be difficult and painful. And as an early supervisor, in like manner, I said, well, I'm supposed to fix this. But the learning was that sometimes what's happening needs to happen. And that sometimes we need to walk with, or whether prayerfully or physically, walk with that unresolved situation. And what I learned in that is that over time, some of those unresolved situations find God's hand in terms of resolution. which is a much more powerful and meaningful resolution than anything I could ever bring to bear. So in short, sometimes I need to step just a little bit to the side. And it's not to say to ignore the situation or the people, but that sometimes it's important that what's happening works itself out. And the role of a supervisor at that juncture is trying to create as safe a space as possible for that to happen. It's a different kind of a role, but I think as pastors, sometimes that is more helpful, because when that situation gets resolved, if it gets resolved, part of the investment in that resolution is for the parties themselves, which is different than no matter what Father says or does, it's going to be your fault. So if it works, I will take it and run with it. If it doesn't work, it was all your fault. Whereas if it's the person working through this, and we either prayerfully or really walk beside them in doing that, they take some ownership of that lesson. And as we all know, very clear for all of us, some of the most important lessons we learn in life are learned by the things that don't go well. So we have to be easy on ourselves. We have to be attentive to taking a spiritual approach to trying to process our own thoughts and feelings around it, be ready and willing to prayerfully or really walk with the person, even in the midst of that struggle, and not reject them, with the hope that in God's time, that resolution will come, whatever it is that is meant to come from that situation. So I'll share a quick vignette with that, with a classmate from seminary, actually. I had a classmate at the time who saw that I had another friend in the seminary and was trying to divide with and for me by saying, look, either you're my friend or you're his friend. Yes, this is seminary, and we're all adults. You've heard me. You've experienced a little bit of my approach to things. I worked really hard, conversation after conversation, trying to convince him that I could be both of your friends, and it won't take away anything from our friendship. Wasn't buying it. We went to having heated exchanges on the same topic, because I realized that what he was trying to do was trying to box me in, and I wasn't going to be boxed in, but neither did I want to cancel out our friendship. It parted without being resolved. And so for years, I had prayed for this classmate. When I celebrate proscomedia, in services. And to this day, we are pretty much able to greet each other. So it taught me, and I realized at some point in that exchange that nothing I was going to say or do was going to convince him on his terms. And I had to let go of that. So I think the other little piece I would just add is that we have to realize that as pastors, the people that we're ministering to also take some responsibility for the actions and their decisions. And we can't hold all of that for them. We can hold our part of it, but we have to also recognize that he or she has made some decisions and has taken some actions that they too are going to have to live with. So I don't know that that's been helpful in terms of a response, but I certainly resonate with what you're raising, that probably many of us in the room have people and situations like this that we sit with that are not finding their way to resolution, and we grapple with how do we continue on? I think we can continue to learn and receive greater depth of compassion and mercy by those experiences. That would be my hope.
Father Robert from Eagle River, Alaska. I just want to make a comment of my journey about caregiving and compassion. I've been a nurse for 30 years.
Ah.
So one of my dreams was to work in intensive care, which I did. And I'd come home after 12 hours looking after a 90% burn or whatever. And I'd come home to my wife and family, my little children, and I couldn't tell them anything, and I couldn't tell anybody what it was like. I've been a hospice nurse for 16 years, and I went from being completely unable to cope with any suffering to intensive care, being proud I could handle anything that came through the door, I think being angry at the people that died and laying in bed being envious of the people that took their last breath. Also, I was a full-time pastor in St. Nicholas in Juneau, plus I was a full-time nurse, and I was on call. And at one point, somebody asked me why they should, you know, be Orthodox, and I couldn't tell them. I had no idea why you'd want to be. And I gained 40 pounds, blood pressure 160 over 110. And then Father Mark asked me if I'd come to Eagle River, and which I did, which was very healing for me. But I'm still a hospice nurse, and lots of black humor and all that sort of thing. But I've come to the point like I'm at the other, I've come out the end of it. And now I feel like I'm strong enough to just deal with things with compassion and leave it at that. And, you know, I've got so tired of corpses and thousands of people dying, but I've come to the end of that. And in my ministry too, also I realized about a year ago that when I listen to somebody, I'm listening with my own self, and I'm assuming what they're saying is what I would be feeling, and I realize that's not true at all. I need to listen to them through their ears and their heart. Those have been a real help to me.
Thank you for sharing. And just a brief connection was the church in Juneau. I spent a summer up there as a college student doing tour guide work for people coming off the cruise ships. You offered a huge perspective that I celebrate that you've gotten to where you have gotten to. In terms of nursing, intensive care, black humor, all that is a way that staff would address their situation by offering just these very kind of satirically humorous comments as a way of venting what are otherwise very strong feelings about what's going on, so that we don't get unmasked. As a caregiver, I don't know that it's so much true for us. I think it's more true in the medical profession, that we have this persona, and we try to work with others through that persona. But it's when that barrier gets overwhelmed, then we're like the people in New Orleans after Katrina. We're just flooded and there's nowhere to go. So again, just what a gift that you put your nursing role and your pastoral care role side by side. And I think what I heard in the sharing of your story is that you went from doing this intensively to having a breather from it of a sort when you went to Eagle River. And I think that's the piece I would lift up, that when we are in the midst of all this, we need periodic breaks. And if I want to make an additional comment here, that if any of you think that my presentations and talks with you are dryly prepared, they are not. They are coming from someone who's in some way preaching, hoping that I will hear that message too. I'm getting a break right now from my ministry context at the seminary by being with all of you. And it has been a tremendously meaningful break. But again, sometimes it seems that they come so far and few between. So that you moved to Eagle River, you had a little bit of a break from the intensity, and that you've continued to be steadfast in your caregiving role. As a hospital chaplain, I too tended to many, many, many deaths. And they never got easier. Not one. It never got to watch the life leave someone is not something that ever gets easier, but in a way almost becomes cumulative. And I thank you for raising that, because I want to use that opportunity to talk about another term, which is called cumulative stress. I think that's another very important dynamic for us to focus on. We have stressors in a given moment. Cumulative stress is having this moment, and then this moment, and then this moment, and then this moment. So seminarians go through cumulative stress by the time they get to the end of the school year. Those involved in clinical training or helping professions, there's a cumulative stress that piles up as we continue to come in day after day. So it's another level of stress that we need to be attentive to, cumulative stress. I think the piece that I was most saddened in hearing in your portrayal is that there were no outlets for you to share about those experiences. As a chaplain, I felt so helpless initially as a resident. Resident chaplains, you get called to a death at 3 in the morning on Saturday morning, and the staff afterward wanted to debrief with you and talk about their experience. And so as a chaplain, we would bring that back to our supervisor and say, I didn't know what to say, I didn't know what to do, and we did that over and over again. Until 8 months later, our supervisor said, oh, by the way, there's this training that you could take. We wanted to choke him that he left us flounder for 8 months before he told us about the resource that I shared with you yesterday, the International Critical Incident Stress Foundation. Hugely important. I would encourage, especially for the well-being of the brotherhood, that if there would be some of you that would take that training and be a resource, that would be just a thought to plant, and maybe you already have thought about this, but if there were some of you that had that training and background and would be ready and willing, should a situation arise, to be able to step in and offer help from that training would be a huge gift locally. IOCC is doing this at a national level and other organizations, but again, before you would undertake Red Cross or IOCC training, do this other one first, because it equips you for that. So I feel badly that as a nurse, you weren't able to find an outlet to talk about it. And in our debriefing team, we found that where nurses and doctors were concerned, we had a window of less than 24 hours. If we didn't get with the team that dealt with a particular patient and talk with them, by 24 hours later, they're moving on, and it just gets stuffed. So I'm glad to hear that at this point in time, you've come to some balance, a sense of balance between your pastoral role, your caregiving role, and that you're able to manifest compassion, because compassion fatigue robs us of that. So, thank you.
My name is Moeen Hanna.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for the beautiful speech and the teaching. Two thoughts came to my mind when you were talking about the subject. The first one is when I saw the picture of the steward, and it says like first me and then the others, which is in a way sometimes makes sense, but the danger is there from that picture is to grow in selfishness and also in carelessness toward others. And I've seen it.
Just say it again.
The danger is of that picture, at least my thought, is to grow in selfishness.
Stop.
First me.
Yes. Okay.
And then also in carelessness toward others, which is, you know, one complete the other, or actually one give birth to the other. So that's one of the thought. The other thought about accountability. Again, I want to share my thought and see what you feel about it. Is it's a good, in most cases, I believe it's a good to share or to be accountable to our spiritual father. And for two reasons. The first reason is the grace that involved between the spiritual son and the spiritual father and the obedient. So those will help us to be more effective. Just want to see what you think about it.
Yes. Thank you for that. And that's, depending on our personality profile, we would tend to being more focused on the self or more focused on the other. So you're right. As with any model, it can be distorted one way or another. If there were time, we could do a personality profile. There are a lot of them out there, and you could find out, you know, what's your proclivity. I think the Enneagram does a really good job with that. That comes out of the Roman Catholic community, that gives us a sense of what our intention might be. And I'll think of, just raise one. I don't know all of them off the top of my head, but always remember number four on the Enneagram is it's all about me. So when you talk to someone, it's just, you know, everything's like this. and that would be a distortion. They would probably not be the person to show that slide to. But I think for many of us, we're so focused on the caring going that direction that we don't want to look. We're not open to looking at what needs to happen here. And we can't see it for ourselves, as I said. So that we need, and that goes to the other part of what you said, we have to be connected ourselves to our spiritual fathers. We have to. There's no way we can survive this ministry alone. It just can't be done without our archpastor, without our spiritual father, to keep us from going way off the road and to call to our attention when they see the danger signs so that we can hopefully change the course. So very well-placed comments and critique that we have to be careful of that. But I think by and large, we're probably more prone to putting our energy outward toward those who are in need, less focused on what we might need. And that's a bad recipe over time because we become, as I said, empty.